You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. It's time to look in the mirror, America. Do you like what you see? Pick up the mirror now, America. Go ahead, pick it up. What are you, afraid? It's just a mirror, America. What could it do to you except reflect your image? The Majority Report.
It's Monday, March 14th, 2011. My name is Sam Cedar, and this is The Majority Report. We are broadcasting live in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City. Happy Monday, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us via podcast or live. Quite a show for you today. I am back from Wisconsin, sent there by you people, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much. We don't have a 360, so you did not hear my... There we go. We'll try that one more time. Thank you. It was quite a trip. I'll have details for you in a moment. Later on the program, we're going to be talking to Eve Smith of Naked Capitalism. I think that's actually a nom de plume, as it were. And she will be telling us about the first, I guess, shoe to drop in the WikiLeaks. Or I guess this is, I don't even know if this is the WikiLeaks leak or simply an anonymous leak of emails basically outlining what appears to be a massive fraud on behalf of the Bank of America. She will be discussing that with us later in the program. Also, of course, some updates on Libya. And Japan, look, you know, I'm not even going to pretend I have a notion about what's going on in terms of these nuclear power plants. I mean, I can barely say nuclear. You know, my capacity to understand science stuff is it's one of my one of the chinks in my armor, as it were. The last thing I remember in science was being in AP biology class and begging my lab partner to prick himself so that I didn't have to actually stick myself with a needle to check and see what our blood type was. To this day, I don't know what my blood type is. I think it's the same thing, coincidentally, as my lab partner. Just horrible. I mean, I'm sure you've all seen the pictures and the video. The devastation, just horrible. And obviously... If you pray for Japan, whatever it is you do, if you can donate money, there's different ways of texting to the Red Cross, very easy to find online. The death toll is now expected to exceed $10,000. Well, I'm looking here. We'll play this clip in a moment. This is just sort of stunning. About 2,000 bodies have been found on two shores of the Miyagi Prefecture. This is reported by the Kyoto News. And no one quite... I've seen such conflicting reports on what's happening at three of these nuclear power plants now, where there has been at least partial meltdown in one or two of them. The Nuclear Safety Agency, I believe this is the... I don't know if this is just the international one, but rates the incident on a 4 on the 1-7 international nuclear and radiological event scale. Less serious than Three Mile Island at a 5 and Chernobyl at 7, but this is subject to change. Essentially, when you have the nuclear fuel uncovered by water, I guess, which would dissipate the heat that's building up in it, then you have the potential for a total meltdown. And I guess in the instance of a total meltdown, the biggest concern is that it's essentially going to just melt through whatever containment structure has been built on the bottom of it. And then you get all this radiation essentially leaked into the atmosphere. And what they have been doing is, as the off gases from having something very hot underneath water builds, they release some of this, and it has been releasing some radiological particles into the air. Depending on who you believe, it's as much as you would deal with if you took an airplane ride and subjected to that in the atmosphere. Apparently the U.S. military and Navy helicopters have basically picked up an increase in this material, and they are pushing. The Pentagon is pushing some of their ships a little further away from Japan. There's a 12-mile exclusion road zone, I should say, around the Fukushima Daiichi plant, and a 6-mile zone around the Fukushima Daini. 450,000 people have evacuated nationwide, in addition to 80,000 from the exclusion zone. Almost 2 million households are without power. That's in particularly in the, I guess, extremely cold north of Japan. There's just, it's just a mess. And, you know, the people talk about the implications of some radiation leaking into the atmosphere. You've also got the tremendous pollution of the soil and the environment that comes from just having thousands upon thousands of car batteries and the carbon fuel in these car batteries and the homes and the buildings. All that crap is just sort of, you know, it's not just mud that comes in with the tsunami. It is all sorts of chemicals. I mean, it's just horrible. And, you know, 10,000 people at least have died at this point. I mean, who knows what the ripple effects of this will be? It's just a horrible disaster. And just to give you a sense of the mindset of the conservative mind, you know, you wonder, like, how is it that what we see in Wisconsin, where people can, where they can cut pay and pensions and benefits for workers without really saving any money, without in any way helping the fiscal situation of any of these states? And a lot of times when these states are not in any fiscal crisis, particularly when we know the rich in this country are sitting on enormous amounts of wealth. Taxes in this country are 60% of, they're at their lowest level of GDP in 60 years. So we know that when you have all this tremendous wealth in the hands of so few, and they're paying such low taxes relative to where they have historically have had to pay taxes, how is it that people can sort of wrap their brains around this? How can they do this? Well, here's a perfect mindset. Here's CNBC talking, I think it was on Friday, talking about the market implications of what's going on in Japan. And here's Larry Kudlow expressing the perfect, nothing could explain their mentality more. I don't know how one lives with themselves and functions in this manner, but this is it, folks.
To the top of the hour here, you can see the Dow is trading in positive territory. It's up, a little more than a tenth of a percent, but still in positive territory, 0.3% for the NASDAQ. And look at the S&P bouncing back. It's up about 0.4%. All in all, the market taking this in stride.
I mean, the human toll here looks to be much worse than the economic toll, and we can be grateful for that. And the human toll is a tragedy. We know that. But these markets are, say, all these markets, right? Stocks, commodities, oil, gold. There is no major breakout or breakdown.
Fine.
As the traders told us, oil is very much a part of this today because oil is moving lower. They feel as though this is good news for the U.S. economy.
That's just stunning. We know there's a, there's a human toll, but at least the economic toll. Well, what's the point of economics? In this guy's mind, it clearly has nothing to do with the vast majority of people. I mean, it's stunning. There's no hesitation. I mean, he sort of doubled down on the comment right after that. Yes, I know the human toll, but I mean, this is, from an economic standpoint, thank God. Thank God we can all be genuinely thankful for that. I mean, if the stock market went down, that would be a tragedy. This, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? So turning briefly to Madison, I have one interview. You know, aside from all the technical problems, and I'm going to talk more in the program about the incredible energy there, the numbers on Saturday from everyone I talked to superseded the largest event they had there before. So there was over 100,000 people. I've seen wide-ranging disparity once you get above 100,000. It's very difficult to measure at that point. At certain points, it was impossible to move. I mean, this is a massive, you've got a huge Capitol building. And the avenues that surround it were completely filled up. And then for a block, sort of in the tributaries leading into these things, and there were times where you could not move. So over the course of the day, who knows how many tens of hundreds of thousands of people came through there. I mean, at any given time, there was probably 125,000. But over the course of the day, people were coming and going. So I did one interview here, and it was actually a very poignant moment for me. You can actually see the video of this, but the video is very choppy because I shot it live on my iPhone. And I had interviewed many workers who were from private unions at that point. And they had all said, you know, why are you here? Because I'm here to support, the public unions. I'm here to support unions in general. We're next on the list. If they can take away collective bargaining for public unions, private unions are next. And I want to show my support. And it was very much a political, they were there for political reasons at that point. And my entire trip was there, it's a political issue. And it was with that mindset that I went and I spoke to this guy who was marching, and he very quickly made it clear to me that it was a very personal issue for the people that he was marching with and that he was there with. And, you know, I was a little glib and, you know, tried to make a joke right up front. And, I quickly understood from this that this was very much that I was being a little bit glib. You know, this is this guy's life and it's his family's life. And so let's play this audio.
Can I ask you a couple questions?
What's that?
What union are you from?
Labor's International Union of North America. We're public employees, Local 61, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, sanitation workers.
And so you guys are bankrupting the state, huh?
We are not. We are not bankrupting the state. We have very little to do with the budget. It's all them assholes up top. We're just working men making very, very, very base salaries. If this goes through, I can't even afford my house payment, so I don't think it's funny.
Yeah. You got a message for union members across the country?
I don't know, brother. Stick together, I guess. This is a mess. You know, everybody makes choices. Some make choices and go to college. They get their degrees and they go ahead and they make lots of money. Others who aren't so fortunate, they look at municipalities. And they pick those jobs and they make places to work for cities. They got to live in the godforsaken things. They work in shitty neighborhoods. They put up with a lot of crap, knowing at the end of the rainbow, they may have a pension. It's a good pension. Comes out to about 19 grand a year. But it is guaranteed. But we earned that. I mean, we worked for it. It's part of the negotiation process. If they take that away, my God, I don't have an education. You know? And I'm not saying it's a right or, you know, I'm entitled to it, but I sure did earn it with the hard years I put into sanitation. That's all I'll tell you.
How long have you been working in the sanitation?
22 world? Years.
And when would you be eligible for the pension?
Age 62, or you can do this if you want to take one at 60% of your pension. You could get it at 55 if you had 30 years in. That's not guaranteed every year either. That's something that is, you know, every 2 years is negotiated. And realistically, in our line of work, they want people to leave earlier because everybody gets old and you can only do the job for so long.
Yeah, I was going to say, how many guys?
Right now, we got 248 people over 40 years old. Probably 48, I believe it is, it's under. We're down to 309 people.
Wow.
We used to 100 when the job originated, and over the years it's dwindled down to 309 dues-paying members who do that job and more because obviously the city demographics has expanded. They've built other subdivisions. There's more, you know, more garbage to be picked up than there was in the past.
And yet you're doing it for one quarter of the amount of work.
Correct. So it's not as easy as everybody always, you know, they group you with the, you know, lazy city workers. And I won't never take that away. There are people that are lazy out there, but that doesn't mean that every one of us are.
Right.
I think there's a lot of respectable people, a lot of hardworking people, and there are a lot of schmucks.
Same thing in private sector.
Well, you take this away, take the unions, take, you know, once the public sector unions go, private sector union goes, where's the prevailing wage? Everything's going back down to minimum. It is what it is, brother.
All right, well, good luck with it. I appreciate you talking.
Take care.
So he's been working in the sanitation department for 22 years. He is going to be subject to wage cuts, pension cuts of his $19,000 a year pension. And it is very, very real for him. This is on top of all the other cuts in social programs. Badger care, they call it out there. We'll have more on my trip to Wisconsin after we speak to Eve Smith on this anonymous leak of emails accusing Bank of America with a forced place insurance scam. We'll find out what that means when we get right back. Hi, folks. You can always support the show and get great coffee, tea, or chocolate by going to justcoffee.coop. Putting the coupon code MAJORITY in the coupon box, get a 10% discount, get some great fair trade coffee. And, of course, the real way that this show is going to be able to continue is if you become a member now. You can do so at majority.fm. You get almost an hour of extra daily show, plus some swag, plus knowing that you're supporting independent media. Thanks. We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report on the phone. Eve Smith, she is a blogger from Naked Capitalism and author of Econed, How Unenlightened Self-Interest Undermined Democracy and Corrupted Capitalism. That could be the subtitle of... the past 8-10 years, I guess. Eve, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much.
So, give us a sense of what is being revealed today by this loose confederation of hackers, Anonymous, and what it tells us about one aspect of this entire financial crisis.
The documents contain some information, alleged internal email results from Bank of America by a former member of its accounting department. What he is charging by these emails is that Bank of America engaged in a practice which is called forced placed insurance. It's a bit technical, but if you have a mortgage, you make an escrow payment every month. That escrow payment includes taxes and insurance. What happens if, for some reason, your policy lapses, and arguably it could be if you made you know, if you made your payment 1 month late, even if you caught up, they could use it as an excuse to cancel your insurance. Then they replace it with a policy that is much more expensive. Basically, you don't have permission to see what the policy is. You don't have permission to object to it. And it's considered to be an abuse. There have been examples where, for example, policies with a face amount of $4,000 have been replaced with policies of $33,000.
So wait a second. So let me just get that straight. So now what happens every month? You got to pay your mortgage, and included in that payment, or I should say just above that payment, but the same check that you send in, includes
right.
a basically a monthly breakdown of your annual insurance on homeowners. This is so that the bank or the whoever gave you the loan can make sure that you have insurance in the event that your house catches on fire. They won't be stuck with just a whole thing of ashes. This in some way basically secures the value of the security on the loan.
Right.
And
right.
So if there's any type of default or whatever reason. So they go out and they buy new insurance on your behalf as the owner of the house.
That's correct. And the cute part is, now that part was all disclosed when you bought your house. The trick is then that if the policy legitimately lapses, or sometimes there are games played so that a policy that shouldn't lapse gets canceled. I mean, there are all sorts of levels of abuse in how this scheme can work. The policy is replaced with a much more costly policy.
And so I, as the lender, got to pay that more expensive policy.
Well,
the borrower has to pay that.
You as the borrower have to pay that more expensive policy. And the second bit is that quite often, now, for example, in this case, the insurance company is captive to Bank of America. And it was originally a countrywide insurer. It's called Balboa. So, you know, when it was countrywide, when it was countrywide servicing it, you know, obviously they'd have a big profit incentive. Gee, let's take this, you know, let's sort of ratchet up and find another way to get more margin here. The second part of it is that there have been cases where people have used, for example, a servicer has used third party. This is not a new abuse. There have been cases where, servicers, so that's the person who actually handles your payments. You know, they take the money from you and from the other borrowers and give it to the investors. They collect it and then distribute it to the investors who hold your securitized mortgage. There have been cases, for example, where where it's theoretically been with a third-party insurance company, but then it's been reinsured back to the same bank. So that basically, so even there are cases where the bank doesn't look like it's the insurer, but really the bank is the insurer.
They're buying these inflated insurance policies essentially from themselves. So
that's correct.
And
yeah.
They buy them inflated because it provides profit to the entity that's selling the insurance. Because it's obviously a far more expensive policy than it should be. And then the servicer is also getting an increased commission because the insurance policy in this instance is worth 7 or 8 times what the original insurance was.
That's correct. So the issue here is that, you know, the anonymous the emails released by Anonymous basically focus on Bank of America. They don't really talk, even though the fellow sort of mentions the fact that servicers are involved, he doesn't really specifically allege that these servicers are co-conspirators. To your point, it's probable. I mean, he doesn't present any evidence to that, but it's probable that they got commissions, which mean they would effectively be co-conspirators and should be liable. I mean, that's the part where this is all a bit, where it's still a bit fuzzy. They said they're going to release more emails. Hopefully, this will be clarified in some of the future releases.
Now, if I'm the borrower here, and all of a sudden, so I've defaulted on my insurance for whatever reason, or I've been sort of forced into default or supposedly defaulted. Either way, and then all of a sudden, my monthly nut, you know, goes up by 7-8 times. You know, I was paying whatever it was. I'm paying literally hundreds of thousands of dollars more supposedly for insurance each month. I can't pay that. So what happens? I mean,
well, this can be, but if the insurance goes up 2 months, you're right. This can be a path for people to frankly start losing their house. you know, if people are on strained budgets and suddenly their insurance, you know, that the increased insurance payments is enough to tip them over the edge, you know, yes, it, you know, at a minimum it's abuse, and in worst case scenarios it can push somebody into default. The real problem is that there is, that the regulators now don't have great means for, well, narrowly they don't have great means for clamping down on servicer abuses. I mean, the problem is regulators have tremendous amount of authority if they want to. You know, they can go in and do all kinds of inspections of banks, but narrowly there aren't, there've never been a lot of regulations passed around servicer conduct. There have been some effective standards promoted in the industry. There was a servicer in 2003 called Fairbanks that engaged in a tremendous number of abuses, and they were eventually they were sued by the HUD and the Federal Trade Commission and entered into a settlement agreement, and then the industry, you know, was basically pressured strongly to adopt the same standards in the settlement agreement, but they never signed on it. They just sort of became, you know, perceived new industry standards. But servicers have never been explicitly regulated. So if you have a problem with your servicer, you really don't have a place to go. I mean, you can go to your state attorney general, you can go to your state banking commissioner. The federal regulators, unfortunately, have made it really clear that they are defenders of banks and servicers. We just got through a series of pretending, what I might as well call pretend exams. I mean, they were just phony. They spent, the regulators basically had tea and cookies with the banks and reviewed their internal records. Well, of course their internal records are going to say they're okay. You know, you need to verify them with external reality, not look, you know, at how they've papered it up internally.
Right. I mean, that's the real issue, is that where are the losses that they've put off their books?
Exactly.
So in the great scheme of things, and I do mean scheme, where do you think this type of servicer fraud fits in? I mean, this is just one element of fraud that's going on, and it's probably more indicative of a mindset than it is the biggest of problems, isn't it?
Well, yes and no, because actually, you know, I think the real question is going to be whether this leak is seen to be serious. The one problem with the leak is it's only a limited number of emails. And I hate to say it, the way both the site it was presented on and the way the fellow wrote up his narrative, it's the kind of thing that people may dismiss in terms of being, oh, this was a disgruntled employee, oh, this is just a few emails, you know, it's a little bit complicated and technical, you know, let's drive by this one. But in fact, escrow abuse is really serious. I mean, this is something that state attorneys general take quite seriously. I mean, in terms of sort of level of crime, I mean, it's basically like stealing. Escrow abuse is kind of equivalent to stealing. I mean, that's something they draw, you know, unlike, you know, robo-signing, where it's an abuse of court procedures and judges take that very seriously because they care about the sanctity of the courts.
Right.
But the banks are trying to argue, oh, they were all deadbeats, you know, that doesn't really matter. Our records say they were deadbeats. Well, it's back to, are your records any good, you know? You know, why should we trust your records when we're hearing of all sorts of people being foreclosed on, some of whom didn't even have a mortgage?
Right. Those robo-signers basically have more to do, are less sort of statutory, as far as I know, and more to do with a legal tradition of maintaining of quality of evidence, essentially.
Well, yeah, well, but that's actually very serious because, I mean, it's very easy to say that that's just quality of evidence, but this goes back literally to the 1677 statute of frauds in England, because they had widespread, basically you would have paid witnesses showing up in court, swearing to anything, and property effectively being stolen. Because you had witnesses coming in supporting the theft of property. And that's why they now have these very strict, and it may seem now to us very antique procedures, how you have to have notaries, you have to have somebody who's sort of an unrelated party swear to certain things, you have to have certain procedures. It's because when you start, it's an area where you start going down a slippery slope, it gets very bad.
Right.
You know, even though some people may say, gee, how bad is it, in terms of setting a precedent, it is a really dangerous precedent to let something like this become acceptable. In terms of this kind of abuse, if indeed the insurance was replaced with more costly insurance, which is generally the motive for doing this. I mean, you know, normally if it's done on a large scale basis, it's an abuse. This is actually considered to be a fairly serious abuse. I mean, I wouldn't minimize it. The problem is I don't yet see in these releases evidence that it was abusive, even though that's a reasonable assumption. It's just, you know, we have to see more of this drip out before we can reach firm conclusions. And unfortunately, the fact that they're dripping it out means it may be easier for Bank of America to stare this down than it ought to be for them.
Right. And we know from the first release, at least, that there is a part two coming up. But you mentioned let me ask you this. This is not quite off topic, but the attorney generals of, I guess about 50 attorney generals now have been supposedly negotiating some type of a deal to deal with this mortgage mess. Can you give me a sense of what your take is on this deal?
It's a complete joke. It's a complete joke. What they have circulated is a 27-page document, which first, virtually all of it is a recitation of things that the bank's already supposed to be doing. So they're now supposed to sign and swear over their heart that they're doing stuff that under the law they're already supposed to be doing?
All right, so wait.
And this is supposed to be a settlement?
Let's back up for just one moment in terms of what it is this deal is supposedly being forged to cure.
Well, that is the whole problem. This process has been so non-transparent that we honestly don't know. Is this a deal? Now, if the banks are getting now, in fairness, if this settlement is just that the banks are getting released from whatever liability is related to robo-signing, that might not be so bad, because it does get in the only sort of new things in the settlement are one thing that's good and one thing that I don't think the banks are going to be able to do. Everything else in the 27 pages is literally just a repeat of stuff they're supposed to be doing now, which is sort of shocking that they feel that they're papering this up.
So we have the situation where banks are going into foreclosure courts. They're trying to foreclose on property that they don't have proper chain of title for.
Right.
They can't really prove that they own these mortgages. So this needs to be resolved in some fashion.
Right, and it's not clear the settlement addresses this at all. I mean, the settlement, it's not clear that they're going to get any. First thing, the state attorneys general really can't, on the one hand, they really can't waive that kind of liability. I mean, if you show up in court and say that party doesn't have what they call legal standing, that party isn't the proper party to be here, that's considered to be a threshold issue. You know, that, you know, somebody show up in court has to be the legitimate party to be pursuing a legal action. So the attorneys general, either way, won't be able to take away the right of private individuals to make that argument in court. The flip side is they could conceivably, they don't show in this 27-page document what releases are being given. You know, the way a deal works is you do X, Y, and Z, and then I release you from certain liability. And they don't show what the release is. They don't show the other side of the trade. They're just showing what the banks are being asked to do. They're not showing what the banks are going to get in return. If it's a very broad release, this is a terrible deal. And there's every reason to think the banks want a broad release, because the attorneys general, you know, a lot of cases, borrowers are not the logical partner, are not in a position to go fight certain abuses. For example, one of the reasons this deadbeat borrower myth, and I say it's a myth, I mean, there are a lot of people losing their homes who can't afford them. I mean, that's
right.
The first thing. But the people who fight foreclosures are a subset of the people who are losing their homes. And everything I have heard from foreclosure defense attorneys is that a significant number of people who are losing their homes are because of servicer errors and improper fees. These are people who should not be losing their homes. The amount of money that the bank says they owe is not the amount of money they owe, but it's cheaper for them to fight this on standing. The banks have made such a mess of their documents that they go into court and say, you shouldn't be here, and that's the cheapest way for them to win. If for them to fight it on, you charge me the wrong amount, means they have to hire, that means they have to get the bank to cough up in the information. That's actually not trivial. The banks fight tooth and nail to divulge the full detailed servicing records. And then you have to hire a forensic accountant, which is a very expensive exercise. And so they almost never fight on the grounds that the records are improper. So the banks get to preserve the myth that, oh, these people are fighting, you know, they're just deadbeats, really, you know, what we say they owe is what they owe. And attorneys general are the much more logical parties to go in and say, we want an audit, we want to see how you're charging people, we want to see what's wrong here. So if they're giving, because the federal regulators are totally in the pockets of the banks. I mean, they're just not going to go there.
So
I mean,
let me
really
see if I can just,
what's happened with the federal regulators.
So let me see if I have this straight. We have a situation where there has been a widespread, essentially, either misfeasance or malfeasance by the banks in the way that they have charged people, in the way that they are claiming that they are owed certain monies. And the easiest mechanism for people who are faced with losing their home is essentially to charge on is essentially to fight back on a standing ground, because it's just simply too costly to fight them on the other ground. That's where the attorney generals would should be coming in, because they have the resources to look in and actually determine what a borrower should be charged.
Well, they could look.
And this is all an attempt by the banks to essentially take away that weapon, that arrow in the quiver of people who are losing their homes.
That's correct. I mean, that's why I think it's crazy for these banks. Frankly, if they got a broad release, they're crazy not to take this deal. They are crazy. I mean, that just really shows how out of touch they are, because they have a tremendous – but it's partly because nobody's fought cases – on this basis yet. I mean, the flip side is there's also a lawsuits going on regarding lender processing services, which provides the big servicing platform to lots of the banks in the industry. And it's conceivable that the litigation of lender processing services, or several lawsuits outstanding, might also reveal some damaging information about bank behavior. So they just got, there's a real tendency of people to underestimate events, the likelihood and costs of events that they don't deem to be too likely. You know, even if the odds of the banks actually being investigated in a serious way or having the payment abuses come up is only 15 or 20%, the consequences of them are catastrophic. Mm. I mean, absolutely catastrophic, because if the charges are true, it's a very widespread abuse.
And just to go back to the deal again, the attorney generals are basically saying you're off the hook in terms of any type of liability that we would go after you for coming in terms of your standing.
That's the problem. We don't know what the release is. If I were the banks, I wouldn't sign this. The bank's motivation is to push for the broadest release they can possibly get. And I would suspect they're going to get it. You know, if this deal were to go forward, they would insist on an extremely broad release. And the attorney general who is leading this, Tom Miller, does not appear to be acting on the best interests of his fellow AGs. I mean, I have heard from people who are in contact with AGs that the AGs don't know what the terms of the release will be. That's unacceptable. If somebody's negotiating on your behalf, they're supposed to be disclosing to you what the deal is. It sounds like he's actually working on behalf of the banks with the federal regulators to get the other AGs in line, because he's trying to get the job of the new head of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. He's angling for a job in the administration. I mean, this whole thing just stinks to high heaven.
And what authority does one state attorney general have to essentially say, I'm from Indiana, you will not be subject to any type of criminal liability or civil liability in Connecticut?
Well, no, that's exactly right. The attorney generals may very well bolt from this deal. I mean, even if he tries to negotiate this deal and the banks agree, that doesn't mean all the attorney generals that he's negotiating with will agree to it. My understanding is that there are six Republican attorneys general who are expected to not sign the deal regardless. But what will be more damaging for Obama is if any Democrats were to reject a deal. I mean, frankly, the way things are going, it doesn't sound like a deal is going – despite all this noise, I don't think this deal is going to happen, because the banks – there's enough division among the attorneys general, plus the banks are making a stink.
All right. Well, E. Smith, thank you so much. I'd love to have you come back, and we'll talk about this these issues more as it progresses. I've been reading you for quite a while, and I really
appreciate it. Okay. Well, thank you so much. It was my pleasure.
And just to remind folks, the book is Econed: How Unenlightened Self-Interest Undermined Democracy and Corrupted Capitalism. And you can see posts almost on a daily basis from Eve Smith over at Naked Capitalism. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you so much. Take care. Bye-bye.
All right, folks. You know what we'll do? We're going to take a break just for about 30 seconds. I'll come back. I'll talk a little bit more about Madison before we go to the flip side. An extra bonus couple of minutes to talk about the great trip out there. Also, I should tell you, I'm going to be on Dylan Radigan's program later this afternoon. I imagine that will come up. And news, obviously, about Bradley Manning. We had someone with a conscience who actually spoke their mind in our government about Bradley Manning's situation. And and they got fired. We'll be right back. All right, we're back. So out in Wisconsin, and I'll talk more about it as I get out there, because it was cold. I don't know what goes on with people in Wisconsin. I don't know if it's all like the milk fat or something like that, but they don't seem to recognize that it's cold. There was so many people there. It was really, really impressive. I'll talk more about sort of just my personal feelings about the whole thing. But one story that came out of there this weekend, and there was talk of it at the beginning of the weekend, but it happened, like, I think it was on Saturday. There was a bunch of Wisconsin firefighters. I mean, I think if you saw some of the videos, they came marching in with like a bagpipe and a drum, and it was so packed, but people just kept shoving to get, you know, so they could come in and sort of in a parade. And there is this bank out in Wisconsin, the M&I Bank. I don't know if it's just like a state bank or what, but the bank was very supportive of Scott Walker. And people came up with the idea of like, well, shit, if Scott Walker's taking money away from us and this bank is that supportive of him, maybe we shouldn't support the bank. So I've got a couple of reports from Daily Kos, and I guess it was... Jesse Russell from, what was that blog? We had him on, actually. Dorsey will check it out. But so, there was an M&I Capital Square branch. They had to close down early. I think this is on Thursday or Friday. Because firefighters local, 311, it's Dane 101, told the audience at the Capitol, I guess it's on Saturday, basically they started a chant, move your money. And so all these firefighters went over to the M&I Bank and withdrew $192,000. Now, as I have made the argument before in the context of Social Security, when people say, there's just paperwork in there. There's no money in the trust fund. It's just papers. Well, I got news for you. There's not that money and that much money in the bank either. It's just a record that says we owe you this money. And so when people went over, they took when these firefighters went, they took $192,000 out. There's a bunch of them. And then apparently, according to this Daily Kos, Stranded Wind over at Daily Kos updates it with photos of the protests outside this bank. It says that there were two firefighters, apparently, who had been saving, elder firefighters, had been saving for years and years and years at the bank. You know, guys who had not... They took out like $600,000 between the two of them. Maybe that was a total of the 120. The bottom line is the bank had to shut. They didn't have the reserves to basically do anything else for the rest of the day. And so, you know, can you imagine if people across the country went and did that? I want a cashier's check, or I'll take it in 20s. In my instance, it would be like, I'll take it in, you know, $5 bills would be fine. But it was great. I mean, the spirit out there is just fantastic. And I'll tell you something, there's so many kids, so many young people, like high school kids, college kids, little kids that their parents had brought out. They all seemed to be completely immune to the cold. By the end, like, I couldn't even hit my, I was trying to, you know, text on my iPhone, and I was like, I can't feel my thumbs. And I'll be posting more pictures that I took with my regular camera. We'll put them up on the site. You can obviously check them out on the site right now. Half a dozen or so pictures out there. And I have a link to the videos. The videos are stuttery, but the audio quality is good. And then, of course, there were some videos that I blew. I had a great interview with a prison guard. And it turns out it was one of those moments where you can see me coming up to the prison guard. You can see just when I thought I was turning on the camera, because it was just as I was turning off the camera. And when I turned the camera back on, you could see me going just like, okay, and I'm walking, and you see the camera like facing the ground because I think it's off. There was a couple instances of that, but I did shoot a That's Bullshit out there. Audio is only fair, but I'm working on it now, and we're going to post that at the end of the day. And I will send an email blast out linking that to you. And we'll talk more about it in the post show. But I also want to just touch on this Bradley Manning story. Where is this? Here it is. I guess it was on Friday. And I'm not sure exactly when the speech was made by P.J. Crowley. I think that was... I don't know when his speech was. It was a couple of weeks ago. And he was up at Harvard, I believe. But he gave this speech, and it was reported, I think, Friday-ish or Thursday. P.J. Crowley in the question and answer period was basically somebody asked him about Manning, and he is a spokesperson or... I should say rather was, for the State Department. And he said that Manning's treatment, which, as you know, has consisted of 23 hours of isolation a day, a prohibition against his exercising in his cell, no pillow, forced nudity for 8 hours out of the day, 9 hours out of the day. He has put on a version of suicide watch because they can't put him on the full suicide watch because the psychiatrists at Quantico say, well, we can't sign off on that because he's not a suicide watch candidate. And so they put him on some other version of suicide watch so that they can essentially do whatever they want to him in attempts to break him down. And so this P.J. Crowley said that it's, quote, ridiculous and counterproductive and stupid the way they are treating Manning. And the Bush administration, oh, excuse me, the Obama administration fires him this weekend following Jake Tapper asking a question at the White House briefing about Manning, and where President Obama said, you know, I think it's fine. Now, maybe he didn't know anything about it. I don't know. But according to some reports, Daley, who is the chief of the staff, from Jake Tapper, said that while some White House officials knew of Crowley's comments, White House Chief of Staff Bill Daley learned of them when ABC News asked the question of the president. Daley told White House officials of Crowley, he's done. So, I mean, presumably the White House was aware that they were essentially imposing upon Manning same things that Daniel Ellsberg called right out of the manual for CIA, quote, enhanced interrogation. And have decided that the real problem is administration spokespeople who will talk about it. That's the problem. And to criticize. So that guy fired. You know, I don't know what to tell you. It's reprehensible. the treatment of Manning, the intimidation of anybody in any type of position of authority who will speak out against this type of treatment for anybody, regardless of whether or not you think he's guilty of something or not. He's been in prison now in the brig for over a year. He was charged in 2010. They added new charges when they couldn't figure out a way of getting at Julian Assange. They could essentially give him the death penalty at this point. What damage, what aiding of the enemy has been provided as a function of the leaks, I don't know. Haven't seen any. I guess one could argue that there have been a couple of near revolutions in the Middle East because of these leaks. We certainly know from these leaks that as opposed to what Obama had said in 2007, which I have right here as a candidate, when he said, to lead the world, we must lead by example. We must be willing to acknowledge our failings, not just trumpet our victories. And when I'm president, we'll reject torture without exception or equivocation. So contrary to that statement in 2007, we know from the WikiLeaks cables that the Obama administration worked with Republicans to intimidate Spanish and German authorities from pursuing charges of torture against former Bush administration officials, which I would think falls in that gray area of exception and equivocation. And then on top of that, now fires any administration official who's willing to simply say, yeah, I don't get it. Doesn't make sense to torture this guy. No, I'm sorry. He didn't even say that. He said simply the treatment is stupid and ridiculous and unhelpful.
He also said, charge him, do it, and let's try him. It's like
exactly.
He wasn't like, let's be easy on the guy
right.
or anything.
This is not a guy going around going like, here's my free Manning shirt. He's saying treat him like our laws say that he should be treated. So absolutely reprehensible. We got to go, ladies and gentlemen. You can IM me at Majority FM on the flip side. Folks, I should tell you, if you can become a member, much appreciated, much needed. We're a couple of pieces of equipment short, a couple of people short, about to be more. Look at Dorsey smirking over there with his health insurance. Soon to receive health insurance. Your membership helps us greatly, and your purchases through our Amazon link at Majority FM help immensely. We just got some new coffee. I didn't get a chance to see Just Coffee when I was in Madison. I got in too late, couldn't get over there. But Dorsey's dug up a story on coffee prices in New York City going up. I imagine they're going up everywhere. And you can get great coffee with a 10% discount if you put Majority in at justcoffee.coop. And I want to tell you, if you have emailed us, you're waiting for a membership email, if you're having some technical problems, we're obviously just a little bit behind because of this impromptu trip. Bear with us. We'll get to you by the end of the day or certainly by tomorrow. Stick around for the post show.